Mikey Pod on the Bayou, Episode 8. Hello, and welcome to Mikey Pod on the Bayou. It is, what day is it? August 24th. Exactly 12 hours ago, I tried recording this show, and I deleted the whole thing because it sucked. I want to stop doing that, but whatever. What have I got for y'all today? It's going to be kind of a thrown-together show in a way, and I wish I'd gotten this out sooner because this show features a interview with Madge Weinstein from Yeast Radio. She was in Crawford over the weekend out at Camp Casey where the peace vigil had started. There were three camps out there when she left. I think my music is too loud. I think my show's going to be changing soon. I don't know what it's changing into, but something doesn't feel right. So stay tuned for all of that. I'd like to start off with... I need to open my email program. I hope this isn't causing craziness. No, I think it worked okay. Today I'm going to play... The first band I'm going to play is Ex-Boyfriends from San Francisco. And fortunately I got an email from Chris, the drummer, about the band. So I asked him if there was anything he wanted me to mention. He thought he had missed the boat, but fortunately I didn't have a show ready to post yet. So, what does he say? If you ever podcasted us again, you could mention like our website, which I'll put in the show notes, that they're on Absolutely Kosher Records, and our first album is out in January. Oh, and that two of us are big old fags. Thanks again for playing Megan, which is the song you're about to hear, Megan. Wow, I feel so much better doing the show right now than I did last night. So we've got that, the interview with Madge Weinstein, and I think that's all the ho-de-do-de-do I've got to tell you. My email address is mikeypod@gmail.com. You can find me on the web at www.mikeypodonthebayou.blogspot.com. There will be a new blog in the next couple of weeks. I've got some great graphics being designed for me by John Ong, and I think that's all I've got to tell you right now. Check out this song by Ex-Boyfriends from San Francisco.
Even now that she's gone, that view is gonna skew, leaving you to try and understand what you left holding, holding in your hands. Stop wasting all your energy, hating what they only see. It's no way to live, and you're worth more than it. Stop saving ammunition for that ounce of recognition. You think this battle's such a bore.
That was Megan by Ex-Boyfriends from San Francisco. All you guys out at QPod, or if any of you actually listen to my show, I would like to let you know. I'm trying to do two things at once. That's when these sentences come out weird. I would like to let you know that the Ex-Boyfriends are willing to be played on podcasts, and I think I've seen a couple of posts over at QPod are looking for gay artists. Now, I do want to say, just this is my own little personal deal, the fact that there are two members of this band that are gay is secondary to the fact that they rock, okay? I just wanted to say that. I just feel funny about, like, gay music and playing gay music or whatever. I've talked about that before. Today's interview, before I forget, I need to thank Scott Mendoe over at Scott Mendoe 2K5. Yeah, for helping me out getting my Skype set up the night before I did this interview with Madge Weinstein. I actually did the interview on Monday, and this is one of the reasons why I feel like I want to change the format, because I should have just released this on Monday when I did it, but because I have this sort of rigid thing about when the show should come out, it's coming out Wednesday, and I think the serve-by date on that is a little late, but it's an important interview, and you guys, just noticing what's going on in Crawford and all that stuff sort of, well, actually, really opened up my eyes to what's going on. I have a tendency to just ignore the news and that sort of thing, and I'm choosing not to do that. So I've been doing a lot of reading and that sort of thing and talking to people like Madge who are up on the events and that sort of thing. And I encourage you to do the same thing. There's a lot going on that we're not being told by mainstream media, which is what is giving me the inclination to change my show up a little bit. So, with all that being said, here's the interview. We Skyped it, and actually Madge sent me her side of the interview. She's got a much better setup than I do, so I mixed her sound file of her voice with mine. And it sounds like I'm actually the one who's on the phone, and her voice is like nice and crystal clear, and mine is, you know. So, I'd like to have a new setup, please. So, please send me microphones and mixers and stuff. Thanks. Okay, I have Madge Weinstein on the show today from Yeast Radio. Welcome to the show, Madge.
Thank you, Michael. I appreciate it. To be on somebody's show where people I know from Crawford, Texas won't listen, so I can really tell you what really happened.
Oh, great. Mm-hmm. That'll be fun. I didn't realize I was going to get all that juicy stuff.
It doesn't have to. It's your interview.
Oh, no. I want to hear anything you're willing to say. So you just came from Crawford, Texas. You were out there at Camp Crawford. Yeah. How many people were
Camp
there?
Camp Casey. It's actually called Camp Casey.
Thank you. How many people were out there? Yeah.
It varied quite a bit. Anywhere from probably at the low point, I would say, if you're talking all three camps, because there's really three, 100 to any 300, maybe 400 at the most, but maybe more. But like at night, they had these little festivals with a sound stage, and the Air America was hosting, and you know, they had several hundred for those events. It was very well attended.
That's so awesome.
By everybody except the media, because that's what was so strange. You know, I was really, Fausto and I were really the only media, and we're not really media. We're just like schleppers, you know. We're not real, you know. But I was so glad we were there because there was nobody else. Do you know, if we weren't there on Friday night, nobody would have recorded. No media would have recorded the speeches by, you know, those wonderful surviving parents and Dr. Lowry. I mean, these were such important speeches, and nobody was there to record them except us, you know, which is, I mean, for me personally, my career, I suppose it's, you know, positive, you know, because Democracy Now! is using my footage, which of course was, you know, great honor. But at the same time, you know, it's just such a sad statement on the media that nobody else was there to cover these historic speeches.
Yeah, that was one of the things I wanted to ask, because it seems like I've talked to a lot of people that I know, and generally I'm the least informed news-wise mm-hmm. of people that I know, and no one knew what I was talking about when I talked about all this stuff going on. And I realized that I learned about all of it through podcasts.
And you live in Texas.
Yeah. Yeah. Why do you think that the media is ignoring this?
The media does not cover the peace movement. They only cover the war movement. And I strongly recommend to anybody interested in this to read Amy Goodman's book called The Exception to the Rulers. I mean, it's hard to believe. It's hard to accept what's going on and to really believe it, because it almost sounds like conspiracy theory. But it's these media conglomerates are owned by companies like GE. I don't know which one of the major ones is owned by GE, and, you know, all these companies that make weapons. And some of the main news people and people in charge of the newsrooms actually come from the Pentagon. And while it is illegal to propagandize in the United States, basically all these media companies are doing is they're recycling press releases generated by the White House. So it's propaganda, but it's even more insidious because it's made to look like it's news when it's really not.
That's so creepy.
It's really bad. It's really bad, and I think part of the reason people don't react to it is because it's so bad that people, it's not even believable. It's truly, literally unbelievable. I mean, we were literally right next to George Bush's driveway, literally. You know, there were sheriffs there. There were cars that said, you know, big red signs that said 100% ID check. But then if you drive around to the other Bush driveway, which is like a mile away because it's huge, there's a huge satellite uplink truck, and it's for all the networks. Every major network had major people there within a mile of us, and they didn't come near us. At least not after Cindy left, of course, because they were just looking for an excuse to stop covering it.
Well, I saw more coverage of the Lance Armstrong bike ride that he did than I did of what was going on.
Well, I'm actually quite hopeful of that, because I know Lance is anti-war, and I'm hoping that at least he got something in Bush's ear.
Yeah.
That was my hope. But at the same time, I'm very hopeful about this peace movement, because talking to these women, and it is a women's movement for the most part, they're not going anywhere. It doesn't matter what the media do, because those women are staying there, and they're going to follow the president around until the war ends. They're not budging. So I've heard people suggest, you know, whether or not the media picks it up or doesn't pick it up, you know, is going to determine the fate of this movement. We have to keep the media's focus. Well, that's true. It's nice to keep the media's focus to make the peace movement grow faster, sooner. But it's not going anywhere. Those women are not leaving. They are as determined as Martin Luther King and his march on Washington. I mean, these people are not going anywhere except when they go to Washington to follow Bush there. And then there's going to be a peace rally on September 24th in Washington, D.C. that's going to be huge. I mean, this movement isn't going away. These people are determined. And they're not just going to all of a sudden decide that they're not... I mean, it's laughable to think, if you met these people, and you will see them on the videos and stuff, but when you see and hear how determined they are to suggest that the movement is going to go away because of no media coverage is absolutely laughable. So it's a very positive thing in that regard.
Yeah, it sounded from what I did hear, what you posted already from the speeches and that kind of thing, that everyone has a really positive and hopeful sort of sound to what they're saying. Was that pretty much the spirit of what was going on throughout the time you were there?
Yeah, I mean, it was one of determination. It was I don't know how to describe it. It's sort of like when you have a cause and you've, I don't know. I mean, these people are right. You know, these are mothers who've lost their kids, and these are mothers in danger of losing their kids. And these are just mothers who see every person in the country as their child, every soldier. and they have to protect them, even if they don't even know they need to be protected, even if they think that the war is just. Because the soldiers I talked to, they really believed that Bush was right. They really believed that there were weapons of mass destruction because Bush said so. And they assumed he was telling the truth because he's the president. Now, I knew better than that, but that doesn't mean they did, you know? And it's really, and a lot of people still believe that. And a lot of these mothers who've lost children, they cannot face the fact. And you know, you can maybe call it denial, but then you're doing some armchair psychology. But, you know, it's a really hard thing to face that your son or daughter died on the premise of a lie by somebody who is just out for personal gain. I mean, that's really hard to accept. So you see all these flags in their yards and you see these yellow ribbons and all this tacky shit because it's really a defense mechanism, I think.
Right. Wow. So while you were out there, I think it was the day two recap that you posted, the mm-hmm. podcast, you mentioned sort of vaguely some censorship kind of ideas. Is that something you can go into more here?
Sure. Well, what happened is, you know, I was hanging out with some people who are connected in the camp. And I did a lot of talking with these people and a lot of recording, interviews, that sort of thing. And so did Fausto. And we, you know, created a lot of content. Now, of course, there's a lot of interviews, so it's not like it means I don't have footage, suppose, because I have plenty. And it's not even necessarily footage I would have used, let's say. But what happened is that these people, one of them is the child of a wealthy, you know, power business person, you know, executive, a Fortune 500 executive or something like that. The other person is a business associate of that same person. Okay, so there's this connection there. And what happened is this the person with the power, the mother and the business associate, listened to Yeast Radio for the first time, I think it was Saturday, and heard the discussion I had, I think it was over the phone a few days before we left, and I said that Laura Bush's vagina, it tastes like Windex. And it wasn't even an original line. I was quoting Margaret Cho. I mean, that's a Margaret Cho line, which normally I don't even like to quote other people, but it was so funny, you know?
Right.
So for this reason, this woman decided not only did she want not to listen to my show, but she used her money, basically, her power to control what other people couldn't say. So she made sure that her daughter could not appear in any of my shows. And the same thing with her business partner, who, you know, was always very supportive and still is a avid listener. So she basically pulled the plug and she used her money to censor through unconventional means, you know, without not using legal means. But and it's disgusting, and it's a reflection of it's sort of an allegory. I don't know if the word is allegory, whatever you call it, but it's a small version of what's going on in the big picture with the media. And that's why I think it's so interesting and an important story, because, you know, in the big picture, that's what's happening to the media companies. You know, they're being controlled by these big, you know, assholes with flaccid penises and big bloated stomachs popping out of their three-piece suits, looking disgusting, not knowing they can't take it with them. And then they have to control their little media companies because, you know, they're friends with Bush and they don't want to offend people and they're afraid to say the wrong thing.
Right.
And people are afraid to take a stand. And, you know, I understand that people aren't going to like me. That's fine. But, you know, and then the argument was, well, that this person couldn't be associated with me because they're forming some sort of a company. And the company, while, you know, somewhat, you know, I don't want to say what it is, but it's the kind of business where, you know, you can't be too tight-assed. And she was afraid to be associated with me because my reputation would somehow affect her. And the only thing I could get out of it is she must be friends with the Bush family or something, because it doesn't even make sense.
Right.
I mean, when you look at the success Adam Curry's had, and he's been, you know, proud to have me on his in his group. And, you know, they've had no problem raising capital. You know, you look at Howard Stern, who says whatever he wants, and he gets paid millions of dollars to do what he does. And Sirius satellite radio has absolutely no censorship. So people who think that they have to stay away from people like me are full of shit. And then you probably saw it on my blog. That recent post from yesterday was from Cindy Sheehan's own blog. And she said something to the effect of, you know, people have asked me to, you know, curb my language, to not use such strong language and profanity. And she said she's not going to do it. That's, you know, you'd have to look at my web blog to read it. I mean, I'm not going to paraphrase it, but you know, it was so interesting because one of the people that I am referring to with this situation is very tightly connected with the movement and with Cindy. You know, and hypocrisy takes so many forms, and you know, and I don't mean to dwell on this because the movement is intact. But I like to tell the story because I think it relates to, I think it's an easy way to understand what's happening in the big picture.
Right. Well, I can understand the disappointment about it too, because podcasting seems to be such an independent and exciting media, and to have something like that happen, that somehow censorship can still show up.
It was very heartbreaking. It was very heartbreaking. It really was. And I was so upset, and that's when I recorded that, and I just was so upset. You know, and I'm not going to, and a lot of people said, are you okay and everything? Adam called me at 6:30 in the morning from England.
Oh, yeah.
But like, I'm not going to hide my feelings. You know, when it's my show, if I'm depressed and can barely talk, that's how I'm going to do it, you know, and I'm not going to, I have to. That's what I'm doing.
Well, so. I think that's what makes your show so appealing to me, just that you just are who you are, and you don't make any excuses or try to pretend that anything else is going on.
Well, that's really an American characteristic to do otherwise, you know, and I've learned that, you know, Europeans, when they come here, we're in a movie. That's how Christina Curry was explaining it, you know, the other day when they were in New York, that we have this very bizarre unreality here, and that's part of what the terrorists are attacking. In fact, the fundamental principle of what Al-Qaeda was founded for was to combat they have like a word for it, and I don't know what it is, like jihadim or something like that, like, they view that we create this whole fiction, that we create our own sort of Valhalla, and that we live in this fiction. But not just that, but we force everybody else into this sort of same fiction and the same denial system of reality. And that's what I think bothers a lot of people. Now, I'm not justifying any sort of terrorism, of course. I think murder is awful. I'm a total pacifist. So, but I think I don't. That's where I, you know, come. I come from a place where I live in reality, and I don't understand why it has to be so fucking hard, you know, because I'm always struggling with people just because I want to just say things how they really are. And I feel like a lot of people just want to live in the Time Magazine, CNN sort of fake world. It's not real, you know, and it sort of hit home to me when I was looking down from the airplane coming into Chicago, and I was looking out the window, and I saw every house had one light on, and I couldn't figure it out. I thought, well, is it the outside light? And I don't know if this was actually what I saw or not, but it doesn't really matter. But it kind of looked like the same sort of color of light, and I thought it would look like televisions. It almost looked like every single house had a television on. And I thought, well, that's really scary, you know, that everybody's getting the same. I mean, it's the propaganda is so sinister. If we read the way our society is today in a book 30 years ago, which a lot of people did, if you read 1984, I mean, it's it would scare the hell out of people, and I think people wouldn't even believe it could happen. So,
but in so many ways, it is.
Yeah.
I think it's easier. I mean, one of the things that your show has helped me with, and just I think podcasting in general, just because it's an easy way for me who has a very short attention span to kind of pick things up, is just that it's easy. It's easy to fall into that fictional world.
And it is easy, yeah.
Yeah, but then when I realize that I'm doing that, it's kind of sickening. It makes me realize that, like, suddenly, like a couple weeks ago, it's like, oh yeah, we're still in a war. People are still getting killed, and I don't think the government wants us to remember that.
It's fucking unbelievable, you know. And the video I was posting, and that's why I was late coming into this call, but I was just, and I'll post it when we hang up. But there's a video I posted of Patricia Furnos, about Fausto's mother, walking around the perimeter of the Peace House, just the Peace House, and she spends about, you know, 3 minutes reading the names of the crosses that are only within the perimeter of the Peace House. Now, these crosses they cross a long, long way. I don't know how long, and all the people that she read were people that died this month. Yeah, I mean, those are just the Americans that died this month, when you think the Iraqis were probably four times that.
Wow.
I mean, and it's they're real people, and it's not being reported. So we, as the independent media and the bloggers, have to report that. And, you know, I understand that people need to, you know, do whatever it is, their hobbies and their passions, whether it's pop culture or chess or anything. But I think it's really important that we devote something to raising the consciousness of the peace movement. Whether it's on a personal level and going to rallies, or whether it's in your show or something, because we are the media now, and there's really no other hope but us. And that's why I get so upset, you know, when I see every other, you know, show on TV and on podcast talking about like some crap like Lindsay Lohan, as if there's only five people to talk about in the world. And it's like, you know, I don't even know their names. I don't know who these fucking people are, but it's the same names all the time.
Right.
And I'm like, what is wrong with you that's all you can see are the same fucking five people? Is you're just, all you're doing is you're becoming a puppet to some PR firm. That's it. So.
Wow. How was Madge responded to, or how were you responded to in Crawford? I mean, because you've got a big personality.
Yeah, and a big ass. I was responded to very well for the most part, but I had to tone it down quite a bit.
Right.
I was told that I was too flamboyant by, you know, certain people who happen to be the same people whose mother, you know, pulled the plug on them. So there's some weird stuff going on. But I was told that I had to tone it down, not, you know, that I shouldn't wear my gaudy makeup and do my hair and everything. And what's of course ironic is that this person that told me that looked perfect every day. I guess it's because she's pretty and I'm not. But she had the perfect makeup on, like one of those, you know, murder victims in the horror movies, and they always look great even when they're, you know, running around sweating.
Right.
But besides that, I keep going to that same point. I don't mean to dwell. But yeah, I was accepted very well, but I had to blend in. So I had to sort of tone down everything, my rhetoric, my clothing. And mostly what I did is I listened to people, and I actually had Fausto do a lot of the interviews because he's really good at interviewing. And I think I'm really good at reflecting. So I did a lot of reflecting. I did sort of these cameos where I would sit and just talk to the camera, or I would film things myself. I filmed all the speeches myself. So, but I stayed out of the camera most of the time, I would say, because I really wanted to sort of, you know, it was definitely a learning experience about my own show, and I it's been sinking in that what I really do best is reflect. What Fausto does best is interview. So why not use people for what they're good at? And sort of that's how what do you call it? Like ensembles work. It's like when you're acting and it's ensemble.
Right.
So it was such a wonderful experience because, you know, I'm normally such a bitchy cunt all the time, and I was level headed the whole time, you know, and I came back happy, and I actually came back wanting to stay. Joan Baez performed yesterday at 5 p.m. and I had to leave. I couldn't see it, you know, and I could have stayed and gone home at 6 in the morning today, but I had to pull out. I always like to leave things with, you know, wanting more, you know?
Right.
And so I felt like that was good that I left when I really wanted to stay. You know?
Yeah, it was exciting to me to see that there were musicians out there performing, because one of the things I was thinking about yesterday while I was listening to your podcast was that we don't have that sort of peace movement that was huge during Vietnam and all the folk singers and all that sort of thing. I couldn't think of anyone like that, but now I realize that some of that is still going on.
Well, so that it's starting up again. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's happening.
Well, it's time. It was time about 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm. And you're not going to hear about it on the news, but it's there and it's grassroots. And fortunately we have the media. And also what I didn't know is that you don't have to go to Crawford, Texas for this. There's the candlelight vigils everywhere. I was talking to the Sky Panther, who's the he's been helping me with doing most of the back end administration on QPutter, and he's going to try and set up a live Google map of all the candlelight vigils and pro peace rallies. So using the Google API, so it'll sort of automatically generate maps of where it is. It's a big job, so I don't know how well it's going to come out, but at least we'll have a place on QPutter that lists, you know, where these things are.
So now that we do have this peace movement getting started, what do you suggest people to do? Like, what's the best thing that individuals can do?
Well, first of all, subscribe to Democracy Now! podcast. democracynow.org/podcast.xml. It's on iTunes.
Okay.
Democracy Now!, that's Amy Goodman's show. That's your best source of news. It does have a liberal slant, but it is definitely reporting, and it's a lot more it's a lot less biased than, say, Fox News. It's real news, and you'll hear a lot. And then I would go and check meetwithcindy.org, which is the Cindy Sheehan site. And between those two places, you can find everything you need.
Great.
You know, I say just keep it simple. You don't have to make it complicated. And don't worry about what the right wings are saying. You know, don't buy into their hype. It's all bullshit. You have to understand the way these people work in PR and how PR works. It's like if you talk about them, you are doing something for them. You are giving them free publicity. So if Bill O'Reilly or whoever wants to stir his shit, he'll mention stuff and then he'll get bloggers and podcasters to talk about him. All that does is help their cause. The best thing we can do is completely ignore that shit.
Excellent. So tell me the name of that Amy Goodman book once more.
It's called The Exceptions to the Rulers.
Okay.
I don't know which is plural, but I have a problem with plurals, you may have noticed. The Exceptions to the Rulers. You can get it from her website. You can even get a signed copy from her website.
Actually, oh, okay.
democracynow.org. I had her sign mine personally.
So. Okay, awesome. Well, I'll go get it
today.
She
was there on Friday, you know. She was.
Oh, she was?
Yeah, we just missed her, but she was in Crawford. She did her Friday show from Crawford. And I've mentioned this a million times, but I'm so excited that on today's show they're going to show my footage of those speeches. So,
oh, wow. So is she just – I've heard her on the radio and then, of course, her podcast. Is she on a television too?
Yeah. Or is it just sound? I don't know. It depends on where. She's on cable access. I mean, there is a video cast as well. It is video and audio.
Okay.
Where you have to just look. I don't know. Yeah.
Okay.
It depends on where you live.
Well, I'll put links to all this stuff in my show notes.
Great.
And is there anything else? Have I left anything out?
No, I got to go to work, and then I have 2 more weeks left of work, and then I'm free, and then I work for Pod Show, and that's it. And
wow.
I'm very excited, and I'd like to say to all the podcasters out there that you can do this for a living, you know? This is something you can make into a job. It doesn't have to be a hobby. You know, you don't have to do what you love doing and not get paid for it. That's not fair. And you shouldn't, you know, I don't think people should expect so little of themselves. I think people, if they really like doing something, they should expect to earn a living. There's my goddamn cell phone. This is bullshit. I better check it.
You need to get that?
Yeah. No. Hang on.
All right. I'll hold.
You can always edit this out. Mortgage queen.
Oh, nice.
Fucking people. Yeah.
Okay, I'll edit all that out.
Yeah.
Okay, so we were just talking about, doing podcasting is a job.
Yeah, you know, I don't want to be preachy, but a lot of people don't want to make a living doing it because it ruins their bias. But I do a show every day, and I spend I want to do it for a living. You know, and whatever you do, I think it's really important. I think the arts have, I mean, you know this better than I, but the arts have issues in this country where somehow artists are expected sometimes to perform for free, like court jesters. Like, just because we're artists, we're supposed to work for free. And
right.
I just don't buy into that. Now, I worked for free for probably 5 years, but I did it in order to gain, you know, acceptance. And it's hard to get through that period, and it's hard to get through all the criticism. I mean, you've certainly seen what I've gone through on LiveJournal, where I just have, you know, quit so many times, you know, with the films I made, and just like people would just dog them, and I'd be like, and I just stopped sending them out for criticism because I was so burnt. But you have to get through that critique period and that, I don't know. I'm being preachy.
You said preachy a few minutes ago, but I think it's great that you are, because you certainly have inspired me. I don't think that I would have started my podcast if it weren't for
an
instant message conversation we had, I guess, a couple months ago, when you were just like, do it.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, thanks for taking the time out. I know you've got so much going on with getting all this footage put together and all that, so I appreciate you being here on the show today.
Sure.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, Madge.
Thank you for having me. Oi.
All right. That was Madge Weinstein. Thanks again, Madge, for doing that interview with me. What do I have next for you? I was going to play another song today. I usually put another song here, but the interview was long, and I need to get to work. So let's do a little Lawrence Simon. His word this week was scarf. And, well, here it is.
Scarf by Lawrence Simon. I don't own a scarf. I used to, though, several. It's required when you live in Chicago. You either own a scarf or you don't survive past winter. You know, I don't own a winter coat either. Not enough closet space to keep one if I did. Around here, there's not much call for it. I also don't own a big-ass sombrero. I'd kind of like one of those. And a matching serape, too. You could call me El Mazo, the kosher bandito, arriba! Maybe not. Mexican food gives me heartburn. And gas. We won't talk about the tequila, okay?
Lawrence Simon with a Mikey Pod exclusive. God, I hope there was a annoying sound when I was testing things out. I think I got it fixed, but we'll see. It looks like the it's not too bad. Okay, so you can find Lawrence Simon at www.isfullofcrap.com. He does a ton of these 100-word stories, and it's really worth checking out. And I love having them. They kind of accumulate on my iPod, and then I'll realize how many I have, and I'll just sit in my car in traffic going through all of them. And I love the way he writes. So you can check those out again at www.isfullofcrap.com. You can check me out at www.mikeypodonthebayou.blogspot.com. Email is mikeypod@gmail.com. You can also Skype me, but I don't know that I'll ever turn it on. Email me first. And that's mikeypod as well. Yesterday, I was, I don't remember where I was, but I was going, I had my iPod on shuffle, as I like to do, and the most perfect song came on, so I'm going to leave you with that after I take a moment to make sure I haven't left anything else out. I haven't. I'll see you guys next week.
No one seems to care as much. No time to smile, laugh, or cry as much. Have we lost the touch that means so much? Have we lost the human touch? No one wants to be alone, to walk a tall and sleep and weep alone. Have we lost the touch that does so much? Have we lost the human touch? Touch me now and let me know. Hold me tight so I can go through this misery unafraid and really knowing what life is all about. No one wants to live alone. Who wants to smile, laugh, or cry alone? Have we lost the touch that means so much? Have we lost the human touch?